Hey guys, welcome to the Challenge Podcast. I'm Coach Steve.
And I'm Coach Nick, and we're going to be talking about everything fitness, health, and the challenge.
Let's get on with the show. What's up guys, Coach Steve here, and welcome back to another episode of the Challenge Weekly Show. I'm here with...
Coach Nick.
Coach Nick, welcome to the Challenge Podcast. How are you doing today?
Thank you, Steve. I'm very, very good. I'm happy to see you.
Happy to see me. Yes, we are still in some restrictions in Melbourne, but we're making it work.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah, we're making it work. And, you know, gyms are still closed in Melbourne, which is quite frustrating and challenging for all of us. And as you know, Nick, I'm working as an osteopath. And part of my job is that I'm renting a room out of a gym. So at the moment, I'm allowed to operate in this large commercial gym, but people aren't allowed into the gym to train. So when I would have a patient booked in, I do the right thing. They're waiting in their car. I give them a call. They come inside. I walk them through a ghost town of a gym. You know, have you been in a commercial gym in the middle of the day where it's daytime and it's dead silent? There's no music, no people. It's got that little bit of a smell of sweat in the air. You walk someone through there and then we go into our little clinic room and I help that person with their aches and pains. But, oh man, I just kind of like want the gyms to reopen. I kind of want people to go and train again safely so that we can all, you know, look after our health.
Absolutely. It's such a priority. We really need to get those gyms back open, hopefully really soon.
Yeah.
Our garage of gains, we need to get out of there and go into the gym for a bit too.
The House of Gains. Do you have a name for your gym?
Well, it was the Shred Shed.
The Shred Shed. I like
now,
that.
Now it's the Garage of Gains because like I'm back on the gain train. So, but it's also, to be honest, we've got in our shed, we've got 50% pets, 50% weights. So
okay.
What you see on what the people see in the lives is just a tiny bit of our shed. The rest of it is like the barn. I don't mind home training. I'm the same as you. Like I've got my little routine, but I do feel collectively that it's really nice to see people out and about in gyms, and that's our life. So we really we don't like our whole industry being shut down for too long, do we?
No, but I think I've really transitioned to that garage gym. I thoroughly enjoy it. I like playing my own music. I like training with no shoes on. I like trialing weird and wacky exercises and filming myself and all the fun things that come with training at home. I think the convenience is really cool. The only thing that sucks is one, it's cold. And when I go to train, maybe in the morning, and I go to grab that barbell and the barbell's cold, like, ooh, you know, you're going to have, even if you've rugged up with everything and the barbell's cold, ooh, that's a cold session. And two, the bugs, I can't deal with the bugs. I get mosquitoes, I get spiders, I get all the things in the garage. So I'm constantly attacking all the bugs around me.
I don't mind the bugs. I find because I don't have like elite equipment, I find that things feel heavier.
Mm.
They simply do. But then I actually don't mind that because if I get my hands on a real deadlift bar, look out.
Like our deadlift competition that's coming up?
Well, I mean, you could handicap me and put me on just a normal, my crappy home barbell.
Get a little bit of whip in the barbell, right?
It depends where we do it and what we do, but I'm excited about that. That's something for us to look forward to. It's friendly and fun.
It'll be fun. I don't think I'm going to know what it's like to lift on a bar that's not the one that I use now, because my bar has a certain amount of like bend to it when I pick it up, and it's got next to no like grip in it. Like the knurling of it is very smooth. So when I go to pick something up, I feel like the bar slipping through my skin or my hands. And I remember when I was training at a commercial gym, there was this one barbell and we called it the cheese grater, right? Because the knurling was so like sharp. When you put your hands on it, you just tear your hands apart. But that was always the best one to deadlift because you locked yourself in, you've merged the bar with your skin and up you go, you're going to deadlift the thing. So
100% agree that you have to have a cheese grater.
You have to have a cheese grater, yeah. And over time, you know, your skin adapts to it. You get those nice calluses that we all chase, and you know, the cheese grater is no longer the cheese grater. It turns into like the rolling pin. It's nice and smooth, but we need a bit of grip.
And also, like, this isn't very COVID safe or anything, but I used to love seeing other people's skin and blood on the bar.
Oh, you're gross.
It's different now. It's all cleaned and sanitized and everything. This is way back in the years.
Back in the days.
Way back.
I do remember training at gyms and you kind of just see like the, almost looks like the powder on the barbell, but then you're like, oh, that's not powder. So, you know, like you have to get the brush and like clean the barbell and you're like, okay, yeah, just don't breathe that in. Anyway, yeah, we're being gross.
I just love a bit of, it's all gone now, it's way back, but I love a bit of collective sweat and things like that. I like all of that. I there's a time and a place for it, and obviously long gone, but you know, that was, it just, it was old school.
It was old school. Well, look, Nick, let's chat about this week. We know at the moment we have transitioned into week 5 of the challenge, which is this second phase, weeks 5 to 8, where many of our challenges have transitioned into weeks 5 to 8 training and week 5 to 8 nutrition. We're probably starting to see that there's not a big change in our training where we're kind of recycling that meso cycle that we call, so that 4 weeks of training. And most of us have now transitioned into a nutrition plan that is slightly lower in calories compared to that week 1 to 4. And that change isn't really a massive change. It could be reflected as maybe one less serving of energy. So you could be eating the exact same thing from weeks 1 to 4. If you've got a really great routine and system and you doing all your meal prep, great. You could do the exact same thing, but you could just take out one serving of extra. So instead of having, you know, 2 servings of rice, you could just have 1 serving of rice in that meal so that we can continue to see progress with our training, right?
But doesn't that just show you that it's really about managing and calculating what's going on? Because it's as simple as removing that one thing, and then that can elicit change. So it doesn't have to be dramatic. That's what I love about this. It's so, so, so simple. You've already got everything in place. It doesn't need a big upheaval. It's, yeah, removing one serving of something somewhere. And you can even swap it around and be a bit crafty and take it out of a snack or something if you've already got your plan. So that's why it's so good and so sustainable.
Yeah, it's all about systems, it's all about habits, and all about making it as easy as we can.
Exactly.
Now, also at this time, over the weekend was our week 4 check-in. So many challengers were uploading their week 4 progress photo. They were also posting it on our Facebook group, on Instagram, and then also on their journals. And it was really cool to see different photos across different mediums. And we love seeing a good before and after, and especially in 4 weeks, because sometimes maybe you and I, Nick, we don't see big changes in 4 weeks of training or dieting. You know, it's hard to see it on yourself, but when you see it on someone else, it's beautiful to see. It's inspiring and it's awesome. So congratulations to everyone who put themselves out there and uploaded a week four progress photo. It was very inspiring to see.
Well done, everyone. And chances are you are inspiring people that you don't even know, you know, and that's the thing. So that's what's great about it. And when you put yourself out there, yeah, you are definitely always helping other people.
And I do think that there is a power in, you know, documenting your journey, right? And kind of like journaling or reflecting through your process. Okay. So if you have started the challenge, you've done the prep week photo, and then you haven't really done anything and then completed the week 4 check-in progress photo, you kind of missed out a little bit on that reflective process over those 4 weeks. Maybe you're doing the right thing and maybe keeping a journal yourself. Maybe you were reflecting on some of the tools in the nutrition template, such as the daily check-in tool, writing down a few things that you did that day. But I'm going to highly recommend that you start using something like the journal on our challenge website so that you can reflect on your journey along the way. Because once we get to the end, you can kind of see your progress going, wow, it really sucked in that weeks 1 to 4, even though I had more food, but it was changing my habits, which was really difficult. Then maybe you might find that week 5 to 8 period, your training gets a little bit of a boost because you're starting to get better at squats and deadlifts and these types of things. And then in weeks 9 to 12, yes, we're having less food, but maybe you're feeling so excited to get to the end because, you know, you're starting to see a bit of a six pack. You got some nice, I don't know, veins in your bicep, and you're starting to feel really good. So it's a great way to reflect on your journey. So if you haven't already, spend some time journaling and reflecting on your journey so that when we get to the end, you know, you've got better skills to understand the journey again if you were to go through it again in the future.
Absolutely. And then you can also see the highs and lows from a different perspective, just with a little bit of distance, and have a look at how it's always going to bounce back after it's been down. And sometimes you don't see that unless you've had a bit of distance. So journaling and pictures are fantastic. I mean, I still use that sort of method myself, and you do too, Steve, with your training. So it never gets old, does it?
No, never. Now, sometimes posting pictures of yourself online can be a little bit daunting, a little bit driven by anxieties and such. And we have developed tools on your nutrition template where you can upload a progress photo every single week. So that might be a way for you to maintain your accountability. So if every, I don't know, Sunday night or Monday morning or whatever day of the week you choose to do it, if every day at that same time, you put yourself out there, take a photo of yourself and upload it into this nice organized way on your nutrition template, that's going to keep you accountable every single week. And then you might start seeing some good changes week to week to week to week. And then you can even start to reflect each week where you go, wow, this on week 5, so far, I look a little bit, I don't know, bloated. But then in week six, I don't. And then in week seven, you know, it comes back and you kind of go, well, why is this happening? And then if you were to reflect and review your journal, you kind of go, well, in week five and week seven, it was really busy at work. I was really stressed. And maybe we had some after work drinks or something like that. And then you see how your body responds to that. So you're starting to create this story, this narrative, and you go, well, when I look like this, it's because of this. And we start getting a good understanding of what's happening in our body.
That's great. I love that, because that's the only way. Understanding can also take the emotion out of it. That's because you've got actual explanations as to why. So it means it's a little bit more in your control.
Now, whenever we get into a space where we're posting things online, such as our week 4 check-in, and we're posting maybe that start photo to that week 4 photo, we always, as humans, get into a position where we start to compare ourselves to others. And I just do want to touch on that idea that, yes, we're human, we're going to do it, we're going to compare ourselves to others, but you need to try your best to not compare yourself to somebody else. You don't know what that other individual has gone through. So let's say someone's lost 10 kilos in 4 weeks. You don't know where they were before the challenge started. You don't know what they've been doing over that 4 week period. You don't know their history. Whereas maybe yourself, you've been training for 10 years, you didn't lose 10 kilos in 4 weeks, and you may be feeling like you've done something wrong. And I just want everyone just to be careful if we are starting to compare ourselves, which we will do as humans, that it can be limiting to do that.
Oh, definitely. I mean, I look at everybody, and I sometimes, with all of my background, I look at it and I go, wow, oh my gosh. And I'm lucky if I lose, if I'm trying to, you know, 2 kilos in that amount of time, that'd be epic for me. So, you know, it's you have to look at other markers as well, and you don't want to compare yourself, and you just want to feel proud of everyone, because everyone's just on the same kind of journey, but just in a different way.
No, I agree. And look, if you are at this stage of the challenge and you haven't seen really drastic results or the results that you were expecting, I guess it's a great time to reflect on your progress so far and really start to do an audit about every aspect of your challenge, right? And sometimes it can be limiting to make a post online or reach out to us and say, oh, I'm not seeing any results. What am I doing wrong? Well, our knee-jerk reaction will be, well, we kind of need to audit every aspect of it. It's like, are you training hard enough? Are you doing your steps? Are you eating well? Are you following everything to a T? And if this is you, where you're a little bit uncertain, if you're doing everything right, you haven't really seen big changes, unfortunately, we don't have that answer for you, because it could be a variety of different things. And we hope that you were spending a bit of time collecting information using the daily check-in tools. And maybe you can start to see a picture going, well, my sleep is really crap. Maybe if I fix my sleep, then we can start seeing changes. Or maybe I'm not recording my weights when I'm training. I'm not really training that hard. And that's our limiting factor. So my advice would be to take an audit of what you've been doing so far. Reflect on some of the information that you have and attempt to be a little bit humble with your approach. No one is ever perfect. No one is doing anything 100%. And if you are, if you claim to be doing something 100%, you're probably not doing it at 100%. And I'm always looking for ways to improve my own training, my own approach to nutrition, every aspect of my own fitness journey. And we should all be in that mindset of continual improvement, or that Kaizen idea of, all right, I'm going to find a way to get better and audit every aspect of this so I can continue to get better.
I don't know about you with your training, but I'm pretty sure you've said this. Yeah, every time I do a training session, I always think, oh, that wasn't 100%. Like I've never gone in thinking, I mean, there might be one in my life that I look back on and go, and I can remember it. And it's almost like that actually wasn't great either. 100% isn't really that optimal either. So with nutrition as well, there's just no way. There's always going to be better, because if just say you've got it all right, then there's also about the timing of it. There's also, you can always improve, always, always, always.
Well, look, Nick, let's talk about some non-scale victories for the week. And I think you found quite a few this week. Do you want to kick us off?
Yes, I would love to. Okay, so I've got Nicola Gibb. Welcome and congratulations, Nicola, on your NSB. So this one is about getting takeaway. So I love this one because everyone can relate to this, especially because some in Melbourne, nothing's open. So takeaway, she picked the chicken and veggies out of the green curry. So there was just a tiny bit of sauce. She added a cup of cauliflower rice and the correct amount of white rice per plan. and then felt super satisfied. So she was able to, she was very crafty. She kind of manipulated the meal to suit what was going on for her, which I quite love because, and the Victory was also saying no thank you to the spring rolls, which is they're her favourite, but she said she didn't want them and didn't need them. So to be able to, like with your favourite takeaway, to be able to actually say no to something as well sort of shows that you're thinking about what you're putting into your body and deciding, you know, on the value of that for you. So I love that because she was still able to participate in the takeaway. Good old cauliflower rice. Cauliflower can become anything, can't it? So, yeah, it's a hero.
It's a hero becoming pizza, becoming breads, becoming everything because it's cauliflower.
You got a cauliflower, you got it.
You got a door, you got a gym, you got a cauliflower, you got your meals. That's
right. It could become a weight too. It could be like a medicine ball, but anyway, okay. And okay, so the next one, moving on. So that was really good. I like that.
No, congratulations, Nicola. That's awesome.
And then Nikki Cherms. We've got Nikki. So we've got two. All of these nice nicknames. I must have found it, the Nicks. So Nikki Cherms, scales haven't moved, but the confidence, motivation, centimetres and strength have. So that's a real non-scale victory. She has really literally moved away from the scales and her motivation, centimetres and strength. So the centimetres have obviously gone down, motivation has gone up, strength has gone up. So, that's the thing. So if you look at arrows, some things are up, some things might be the same. That's okay. So that's really good, Nikki. The fact that you've identified that and articulated that, that puts you in one of our non-scale victory for the week.
Congratulations, Nikki.
Well done. And I also have another one, Kimberly Crothers. This is her words. I go to a remedial therapist for treatment every 4 weeks. I went last week after 3.5 weeks of the challenge and she noticed the muscle growth in my legs. She hadn't previously told her therapist, her remedial therapist, about the program she was following. So this must be something that she goes to regularly, and this person has remarked on the changes in her muscles. So that's fantastic.
That's beautiful to see. Yeah, that's so good. Because we're the last people to see changes in our body, right? And it's always when someone else notices it, and you're like, what, really, have I? That's when it's really a change.
Yeah, especially somebody who maybe works closely with your body in that, because obviously, say yourself, you'll work with people and you'll notice that somebody's tight somewhere and you might be desperately asking them to do their exercises that you've recommended to actually then get better. So any time, I guess anyone's doing that kind of thing, they will definitely notice changes in their clients for the better. You'll be able to tell straight away.
We can tell if you're doing the exercise or the stretch or anything. Yeah, we know.
That's an NSV that you can relate to as a therapist yourself, as somebody who really looks after people.
Look, I've got one from the journals, and it was a fresh one this morning. This one goes out to Ali Fitzek, who completed a 50-kilometer charity ride with her husband and her son. And she states that because of her training, she was able to, quote, float through the 50 kilometers and had no pain that day or the next 2 days after. So congratulations, Ali. And I think that's truly the importance of strength training or even just training in general, that we are training our bodies to get better at life. And Ali wasn't training for a 50-kilometer charity bike ride. She wasn't training for that event, but because of her foundation of strength and fitness, she was able to go and complete this activity and float through that activity like it was easy. And for some of us, saying that you're going to go ride 50 kilometers is like a nightmare, right? Being like, oh, geez, I can never do that. But with some capacity of strength and fitness, that event can be quite easy. So congratulations, Ali. You showed us that, you know, it is more than just the scales. It is about changing our lifestyle, making these events easy.
Definitely, because 50Ks is no joke, really. It's quite, to be able to just jump on a bike and do that is epic. Love it.
Congratulations. Congratulations to all of our non-scale victory people this week. It's awesome to see. And, you know, if you want to be featured in our non-scale victories, talk about your non-scale victories either on our Facebook group, on Instagram, or the journals, or on the forums. we scout through them all and you'll be featured in our non-scout victories.
Definitely. If you could start to use the hashtag NSB, if you're not already, that's really good because I've started to see a few people using that and it's really helpful because then I can find it.
Beautiful. Now, Nick, let's go through our Coach's Corner tips for the week. So would you like to start us off with your coach's tip?
Okay. So I'm just going to have a little bit of a chat about various cardio options in the gym. So this is just obviously within our program, cardio it's not the top priority. This isn't advice for people to go away and just do this. This is just a little bit of advice for some people that have asked me questions about specifically stationary bikes in the gym and what is the best way to get the most out of being on a stationary bike. So I've just got a few little tips. So if you have a stationary bike that has a computer, you want to look at the RPM, which is your cadence, which is your revolutions per minute. So that's how fast you are going. That's about four different ways of explaining the same thing. But I believe that the optimal speed to just do some pretty gentle cardio but effective for your aerobic system, just say you're doing it for 20 to 30 minutes, is around about 80 RPM. Now, that is because the resistance isn't going to be too high. So it's not going to tax you. It's not going to tax your legs too much. And also it's going to allow you to just get that heart rate up enough to actually be effective. So 80 to 85 RPM. So if you can remember that, you don't want to go under. So just say you are going under, you need to lower the resistance. So you need to make sure, because the worst thing that you can do is to, and I see this a lot in gyms, is to put it up on the biggest, highest resistance, thinking that you are doing something effective and you're possibly pedaling at, say, 60 RPM. And I see people doing it and they're kind of stomping and not getting the full pedal stroke and not even getting their heart rate up, thinking that they're doing the right thing, but harder isn't better on these bikes. So 80 to 85 RPM. One more thing, if you've got wattage, you want to try and get minimum your body weight in watts. And then if just say you're quite good or you want to get better and better, the ultimate would be to do double your body weight in watts as well. So it's a little bit like weight training. So wattage is a fantastic measurement of progress because it's you versus you. But your first measure might be to say, I'm going to do my body weight in watts for 20 minutes. So that's a really nice way of testing your threshold. Now, if you can do double, that's excellent as well. And then it goes from there. So that's all cycling sort of stuff. But just for your general cardio, you want to try and do 85 RPM round about your body weight or over in watts. And you can let me know how you go with that. But that's a really effective, nice aerobic cardio workout that's going to really help you to get the most out of your time on those machines. And also, if you've got a bike with a flywheel, which they often do, which is the wheel at the front that can really create momentum, don't let yourself spin out of control with that either. So you do want to have an amount of resistance that allows you to get that 80 RPM. So otherwise you could get 100, but that's also ineffective and could hurt your knees and can compromise your recovery for your weight training.
I like it. So are you training at 2000 watts? Is that you?
Oh, no, I can't train at 2000 watts. But yes, 2000 watts would be a peak. But I've never hit 2000 watts. Do you want to know people can do this if they want for their little hit burst. You can see what watts you can get. You make sure that you strap yourself really well in to the pedals. And this is completely of your own accord, but you want to try and get your peak watts. So the best I've ever got in my life is 1,542.
Wow.
And that was for 6 seconds. So we can have a watts competition, but 2000 watts I've never done. But it's very interesting to see your threshold and that kind of thing. But it also makes cardio or aerobic training quite interesting too. So because it gives you some metrics, and we all love some metrics. You know, you go into a spin class sometimes, and it depends who's taking it, but you actually don't necessarily know if you're progressing or not. You might be sort of sweaty. You might come out going, "Oh gosh, well I'm tired," but if you can start to look at some of the numbers on the equipment, you can realize that you can progress within that as well, quite gently. It doesn't have to take over your life. And the other thing is also, I'll point out that any type of metrics like calories on any of those equipments. They can, the best thing is to just use that as maybe a timer. So you can go, in this amount of time I can do this, but it doesn't actually equate to what's going on in your body. So don't say, I've done 600 calories, so I'm going to go and eat 600 calories.
No, good. I like it. So when it comes to cycling or on the stationary bike, are you an advocate of sitting down on the bike, or do you love a good hill climb where your butt's lifted up?
Oh, well, if you're going to stand up, I mean, I'm an advocate of not doing anything on a bike other than what you would do outside. So I'm very old school with that. So I'd never do anything like weights on a bike. I think that that's, or push-ups or anything. But I am a big advocate for coming out of the saddle, as long as you are on a bike that allows that to happen without hurting your knees. But when you come out, what you want to do is you want to do a nice full pedal stroke. You want to lift up, make sure you get the hamstrings and glutes involved as well, so the posterior chain, and try not to lean too much on the handlebars. That's the other tip. But I absolutely love coming out of the saddle. I've been known to do like 20 to 30 minute bursts out of the saddle with people. But
20 to 30 minute bursts? I don't know if that's a burst.
I don't know why I say bursts. It's not burst at all.
Oh my God.
I used to have little competitions with people in the studio because the watt bikes are hard to stand up on. But there was this guy that came in, and I couldn't even change the music because I didn't want to sit down before Michael Ferguson sat down. But then I found out that Michael Ferguson's actually like a state champion cyclist. I was dying, but I refused to sit down. But yeah, I like to come in and out of the saddle. I find that that's quite good. But sometimes on the bikes in the gym, unless you get to go into the cycle room, which it's great if your gym allows you to do it, you should use those bikes rather than the ones that are on the gym floor. But it depends on what gym. But if you can, you definitely come out of that saddle, because it's a whole different ball game. Yeah, I would do both. So if you ever do one of my classes, we might try and do a Zoom spin for anyone that's got a bike, but that's another topic. But yeah, in and out. You should join my class one time.
Oh gosh, yeah. I always liked cycling, and I for a long time I commuted via bike to my local gym where I was working. So I've always been a fan of cycling. I haven't done many RPM classes, maybe half a dozen or so, and I always find them fun and sweaty. But I think I just like weightlifting more.
I know, me too. So I do feel like I should bring a bike into the office, and we should do like our podcast while sitting on bikes.
While sitting on bikes. I actually just bought a small treadmill for home, and it has like a detachable little handle at the front, so you could put it under a desk and you have like a walking desk at home. So maybe we'll do our podcast and I'll just get my steps up.
Well, that's right, because often we're sitting down a lot doing a lot of the back end work, so we have to make sure we get our steps too.
Yeah, yeah. Important. I found it on Kogan. So it was Kogan end of financial year sale. I think it was a couple hundred bucks. So there you go. There's a bargain for you. Get a small little treadmill.
Really good. And especially once the baby comes as well, you don't know when you're going to be allowed outside ever again.
Yeah, that's it.
Oh, no, actually, that's not true, because you'll probably just get a pram and go for it. That's all you'll be doing is walking.
That's right. Well, look, I wanted to talk a little bit about salt. So I guess this topic comes up from my own little experiments that I do, my own little interest and my own kind of reading. And I want to talk about salt or sodium and its influence on strength training. So salt, we know that it's one of the most important minerals in our body, and it's probably the only rock that we eat. So salt is a rock and we eat it. Okay. Now our body requires about 500 milligrams of salt per day just to maintain function. And the World Health Organization recommends about 2000 milligrams as the upper limit of salt or sodium intake. Now, when we start a dieting process, one of the first things to get eliminated is salt, where an individual doing all the right things, we know that salt is closely linked to things like hypertension, cardiovascular disease. It gets a little bit icky and murky around the research of it, where we know that there's like an association or a relationship. There's a few mechanisms where we could see that it's kind of linked, but it's unclear if, having higher salt leads to things like hypertension or high blood pressure. We know that when you have salt, it increases the total amount of volume of blood in your cardiovascular system, which does increase your blood pressure. But then once your kidneys filter out that salt, blood pressure can just restore back to normal. So it's kind of one of those things where it goes, well, higher salt increases blood pressure, but that might not cause the disease of hypertension where our blood pressure is higher.
Yeah, like all the time.
Yeah, yeah. And that's, you know, through other factors that can lead to things like hypertension, usually around our overall fitness levels. So sometimes, you know, salt gets a really bad rap, and then the first thing we do is eliminate it when we're starting a diet process. This can be our limiting factor in our ability to adhere to the diet. So if you've been having a regular salt intake, let's say 2000 milligrams, you start a diet and boom, all the salt's gone and you're down at that lower limit, that can negatively affect our appetite, our craving for sugar, and then it leads to other symptoms such as muscle cramping and such, and even cause things like hypertension again, okay, or hypotension. So not having enough salt can be problematic.
So that's interesting that it can lead to, not having enough salt can lead to craving sugar.
Yeah, yeah. So like salt plays a role in, it's like the insulin model, and can lead to things like insulin sensitivity. So lower levels of salt can, one, lead us to crave sweet products because we're trying to find some sort of substance. But then two, because when we have lower levels of salt, we are often fatigued. And when we are fatigued, that's normally a cue for our brain to go, yeah, I need something high in energy right now because I'm, you know, fatigued. So that can lead us to make decisions like, oh, I'm tired because I don't have enough salt, so I'm going to go eat that chocolate bar or that, you know, glass of cordial or whatever it is, because I know that that's high in energy. Okay.
So it's very, to me, that's incredibly interesting about how, certain things, it's all about just needing energy, really.
Yeah, it is. It is. Now, you know, when we're talking about sodium, if we look back in history, we kind of came across the importance of sodium when we were starting to sail across the seas, where we weren't really having as much salt, and that led to a whole bunch of different problems in our bodies. And then we ended up having really high amounts of sodium for long periods of time. And that was, you know, in the like 1600s. So now we're having, you know, something like 1/10 of the level of salt that we were having hundreds of years ago. However, we're seeing almost more obesity and more problems around that than we did previously. So we start to point our fingers and go, well, would we benefit from more salt, right? Which gets me, these are the types of questions that I scratch my head at. Whenever there are recommendations, I go, okay, well, what is the mechanism here? And there are some strength athletes and strength coaches who are advocates of higher sodium intakes, especially around strength training. So we know that sodium does a few things for our body. So one, it increases our body temperature, which is really great for training. So when we're doing a warm-up, we're trying to increase our body temperature. We can get that a little bit from sodium. It increases our blood volume. And when we have more blood, then more nutrients goes to different parts of our body and leads to things like the pump. When we have more blood in our body, we can transport oxygen more around our body. So it can lead to increases in sports performance while we're training. And then we also know that sodium is really important for muscle contractions and nerve function. Okay. So what I've been experimenting with, which is the whole point of this entire conversation, is I've been starting to put a small amount of salt in a pre-workout. When I go to train, I'd have a pre-workout, Max's Vita Pump, and I just grab a little pinch of salt and put into the pre-workout, shake it up and drink it. And what I've been finding is that I feel better when I'm training, and some of the heavier loads, they feel easier for me. They're still challenging, but they feel easier. So maybe what's happening in my body is I'm getting a higher level of blood volume so that I can train. I can get more oxygen to my muscles when I'm deadlifting, squatting. My nerves can fire better and my muscles can contract better, leading to increases in strength.
So how much are you putting in?
Literally a pinch. So I just have rock salt, not even table salt. So just a pinch of rock salt into the pre-workout. So this is just my mini experiment. These are my findings. And there is a little bit of data to back it up. For example, there is a few studies that looked at Gatorade and other salty drinks. And what they did was they had athletes not drink it, put it in their mouth and swish it around their mouth and spit it out. And then they went and did a bout of exercise. And there were some correlations to the athletes that rinsed their mouth with sodium or salt and then increased performance. Okay. So there are some of these ideas that it starts from the tongue. So when the salt touches our tongue that leads to a cascade of events that can lead to these outcomes. So look, my advice is to test it, right? Be a good scientist and test it. You may find that, you know, you have a little bit more energy in the gym. Maybe it's because when we have salt, we're able to absorb water better, so we feel more hydrated when we're training. Or another side effect is when we have a bit of salt, we can reduce our diuretic effects. So you basically hold in your pee a little bit. So if you are one to, you know, you're training and you have to go to the toilet a few times and it kind of ruins your session, hey, maybe a little bit of salt before you train can help you to hold it in so that you can complete your session and then go to the toilet after.
I wonder if there's a correlation. I mean, so many of my friends and I, we always need to pee. So maybe we just do not have enough salt.
Yeah. Well, think about the common symptoms or complaints when someone begins the challenge where they'll say, oh, I'm getting muscle cramps. Yeah, it could be because they're exercising and these types of things, but it could be because they've decreased their sodium intake. Now, we do know that sometimes sodium can lead to subcutaneous fluid. So that means that, you know, maybe this like soft look when we do have salt. And that's a little bit of this anecdote where some people experience that, some don't. You may find that when you do have a lot of salt or an increase in salt that you do kind of look a little bit watered out. And that's okay. If we are going through a training phase, you might benefit from looking a little bit softer while you're building some muscle. And then if you were going through, you know, maybe like a week before the challenge concluded and you're trying to do your final photos, okay, maybe you did go through a little bit of a sodium manipulation to get those effects. So yes, these are some of the side effects, but I think that the positive outweighs the negative in that risk to reward ratio.
I think I'm going to join your experiment and be a second person.
That's it. N equals two. All right.
Yeah, I think you'll like that. So as of today, I'm going to see what happens for 1 week.
Look, I love it. And if you're listening to this and you want to join in my little experiments, let me know how you go. Either post about it on our Facebook group or on the forum, or heck, you can even just direct message me on Instagram or Facebook and let me know if you see any changes by adding just a little pinch of salt into your pre-workout before you train. And let me know if there's any positive or negative. So if you see a negative outcome, maybe you're not able to train as hard. Great. I want to know that information. And if you feel a little bit stronger, let me know as well, because this is what we're doing. We're just collecting data.
The triple S, Steve's Salt Study.
Steve's Salt Study. I love it. Good. Okay.
And that's what we're doing. And I'm a member of this now because I love it. That's fantastic. Very good.
Well, look, Nick, let's answer a few of some questions that have come up on the forum in the past week. So would you like to start us off by talking about our good friend bloating?
Oh, our excellent friend bloating. We love bloating, don't we?
We love bloating, yeah. So there are a few challengers who are experiencing some bloating. What advice would you give to anybody who is experiencing bloating?
Okay, so bloating. First of all, I reckon it's funny. It's one of those words that we probably all have different ideas about what it means to us. There's like a definition, I guess, but universally, we don't probably all have the same idea of what it is. So firstly, you have to define what it is for you, because it's going to be pretty hard for us to analyze what's going on with you if it means something different to every single person. So for some people, bloating might not even be that they're bloating. They might see that the scales go up and suddenly feel that way. And if before they knew the number on the scales, they probably didn't even feel that way. So it can sometimes be something that's in your head. But just say that you actually have a distended abdomen, like stomach. Just say that that's what it is, that you feel that your tummy is sticking out. Would you agree that like that's how we would define bloating for this?
Yeah, I'd say so. For this definition, yeah.
So you're normal. And like whatever normal is, and then suddenly it sticks out. So first reason could be that you haven't gone to the toilet yet. So that's a very simple one. Or that you maybe are not as regular as what you could be going to the toilet. So, you know, you really want to try and go, I mean, twice a day is probably pretty good. I don't want to get really too far into that. But, yeah, just got to make sure you're actually pooing. Poo emoji. We can insert that here, even though it's not on a movie right now. But so there's that one. So I've got two Asians, constipation or ovulation, because ovulation can also sometimes make you feel a little bit bloated as well, depending on how your hormones are. As like for myself, I know that when I'm ovulating, that's a time almost like just before my period where I'm going to feel a little bit bloated. That's just the way it is. So for the purposes of the challenge, if you've increased your fiber, so often if you haven't been having too many veggies or nutrient-dense foods, things that have a lot of that are quite fibrous, you could be having more fiber than what you are used to having. So that's going to also fill your tummy up and make you quite full, so bloated. Then there's, it can also obviously change the bacteria in your gut. It can slow down your digestion. So that's once again about just maybe the process takes a little bit longer. Foods that you're not used to having can also make you feel a bit gassy sometimes. So there's different reactions in your tummy to those things. And sometimes even just feeling that way, changes in protein powder, maybe more protein as well, takes longer to digest. So there's a lot of different things here, Steve. So please slow me down if I'm saying too much too soon. So around about the time of your period as well, which I've touched on, that's an obvious one, but it's before, it sounds terrible to be a woman, but there's like 1 minute in the month where it's okay. And then there's before your period, sometimes during, and sometimes for some people, even a couple of days after. So it's really good to get to know yourself, because I'll just say, I'll put myself out there as an example. Before my period, I'm actually fine. During, I start to get a bit not quite right. And then a couple of days after, that's when I'm like, oh, and the scales will go up and all. And it's taken me, okay, so I'm 42. So let's hope I don't go through menopause anytime soon, because I've just worked it out. So give me a couple of years to understand myself. I now know, just from tracking it, just the same as we would track our weights data, I now know this just from tracking religiously. My own mum even will tell me where my cycle's at, because it's so important for us all to know. Otherwise it's dramas. So I'm telling you, even myself as a coach, I have people have my back about this. Shane says to me every month, yes, you are like this. That's right. It's not a drama. So I have people that track for me. Now back on track. You could also be sensitive to some of the foods that you're reintroducing. If you want to look up FODMAP, so high FODMAP foods, they're sometimes, they can mess with your guts a little bit, gut bacteria, gut fermentation, things like that. So it just depends. And now I'm not saying do or don't eat them, but just I think be aware, don't you? It's not, some people react differently to certain things. So myself, for example, broccoli and I are not the best friends in the world. We just are not, even though for bodybuilders, chicken and broccoli is sort of the standard, but there are other veggies that I react quite well to. So you sort of have to trust yourself as well. Now, you can speak a bit more about the whey situation, but I'm okay with all sorts of protein. But I think you said that, is it the concentrate or the isolate that you're not good with?
Yeah, so whey protein concentrate or casein protein, because it's a less filtered version of protein, has a little bit of lactose in it. For me, my body struggles a little bit, so I opt to have a whey protein isolate, which is more filtered and my body responds well.
Do you have in general other dairy, or do you stay away from that yourself?
Yeah, I'm the classic, like if I have any like milks or dairy products, I know about it. Things like yogurts and cheeses, I'm usually okay with, where there's much lower contents of lactose through that fermentation process. But yeah, things like creamy products and stuff, I suck it up. Sometimes, things are really tasty, but oftentimes I regret it later.
That's what I appreciate that about you. Oh, listen to me, I'm appreciating you, but I appreciate the fact that you will say that isn't necessarily going to be great for me, but I want to have that now, and these are the consequences, but you're aware of that. So that's also good, because it doesn't mean you have to stop everything. You just have to be aware of these things and what they do to your body, and then you can go, oh, it's not a surprise for the next 2, 3, 4 days if I feel a bit bloated, because this is what this does to my body. Yet my friend is sitting next to me having the exact same thing, and they are as flat as a pancake all the time. So it's different people, different bodies. Now the fiber as well, like I did touch on that, but also the idea of not having too much fiber per meal as well. So we've got that in our template, don't we, where you can actually adjust the levels of fiber per meal. So you don't want to overdo it, and you certainly don't want to overdo it for the day. So it's really, you want to stay under, I mean, it's under 50 grams, isn't it? Like that's the sort of.
Yeah, if you're having more than 50 grams of fiber per day, you probably know about it. And if it's more than, you know, let's say 20 grams of fiber per meal, again, you'd probably know about it. So my advice would be to try to stick under 20 grams of fiber per meal and under 50 grams of fiber per day for that.
Exactly. And the thing is, that might be something that people haven't thought about so much, because, you know, when you go, I'm going to be healthy, I'm going to eat all the salads, all the veggies, and you see people piling their plates, specifically because we have that large allowance for that. That doesn't mean that you eating all the foods at once is going to feel good for your gut as well, because it's like a shopping queue, isn't it? You know, like the express lane. You need to kind of have some spots in between. Someone needs to regulate it. You can't just have everyone rushing towards the counter at once. So you've got to regulate your fiber intake. Do you like that analogy?
I like that analogy. You know, just talking a little bit about that physiology of fiber, our body doesn't really digest fiber. It's the gut bacteria in our large intestine which ferments the fiber so that we can digest it. So through that fermentation process, that releases certain gases and compounds, and that can lead to that bloating sensation because we've got more gas in our body. Now, there's other ways that air can get itself into our digestive system that could lead to bloating symptoms. And that could be that we're just eating too fast. So while you're consuming food, you're also consuming a lot of air, which can lead to things like gastric distension or that bloating sensation. So there's just other considerations as well, where sometimes it isn't really just the food that we're eating, it's how we're consuming it. And that kind of links with things like water consumption. So if you are huffing and puffing while you're drinking, you're going to be consuming more air while you're drinking, which can also lead to that bloating sensation or even a bit of flatulence as well.
Yeah, definitely. I think I'm guilty of not being super mindful when I eat. I will often stand up or do other things and have my meal without being conscious and sitting down and actually taking time to chew the food properly. So you know how we were saying before about we can always do things better? That's something that I really need to work on, because I'm always in a hurry, and that is not good. That is not good for my digestive system. So good reminder. So there are quite a few reasons why people could be bloated. Beyond that, I think it's worth going to see somebody about it. If none of that helps, then it's probably beyond our scope.
That's right. Yeah, and I would recommend that if you are experiencing prolonged symptoms of bloating, that you may need to visit a dietitian, and you may need to go through a journaling process or even an elimination diet where you systematically eliminate certain food groups that you get a good understanding, because you may not know that you're sensitive to broccoli like Nick, or you may not know that you're sensitive to lactose like I am, or anything in between. So it may require a little bit of work from your behalf and taking the steps to find out why this is happening. Next question, I'd like to talk a little bit about calories. Question that comes up of, should I change my calories if I'm dropping weight already on the current calories? So as we transition into weeks 5 to 8, most of us are going through a calorie drop, like we mentioned at the start of this podcast. Now, some of us were seeing some good weight loss in that weeks 1 to 4. And then as we transition into that weeks 5 to 8, the question comes up of, oh, well, should I continue with the program and reduce my calories even though I'm seeing weight loss? And my advice to this would be that our goal of weight loss is to lose about 0.5 to 1% of body weight per week. If we're losing less than that, we aren't in a significant energy deficit to see a good change. And if we're losing more than that, so more than 1% per week, then that indicates that we might be losing other things other than body fat. So that could be lots of water, that could be lots of muscle, other tissues, other things that we might not want to be losing. So a good goal to hit is that 0.5 to 1% of body weight per week. So let's say me, I'm about 100 kilos. That means that I want to be aiming to lose between 500 and a kilo per week while I'm dieting. But then Nick, let's say you're 50 kilos for math's sake, 1% of that would be about that 500 grams. And then 0.5% would be about that 250 grams. So this is this idea of weight loss so that we can minimize muscle loss while we're in an energy deficit and we're not in too much of a deficit that we're just hating life.
And also, yeah, that makes people such as myself, who might be that the little bit on the lighter side, feel a bit better about when we see people losing lots and lots. It does, as we said, it touched on at the start, it does depend on your initial starting weight when you get those figures in front of you. So that's why you can't compare.
You can't compare. Now, if you are following that week's 1-4 nutrition template and you're consistently seeing that 0.5 to 1% of body weight per week consistently, great. Happy days. Stay on that week's 1-4. And heck, even now, you could follow that week's 1-4 if you're consistently seeing that 0.5 to 1% of body weight loss per week. If you're not seeing that, maybe you're hovering around that, I don't know, 0.25%. So like you're just losing a small amount. Okay, maybe we need to increase this energy deficit by transitioning into that week's 5-8 nutrition plan. My big but here is that we do need to consider our energy expenditure through this whole process. So if you are, one, not tracking your steps, or two, your step count is slowly decreasing, that's suggesting that our energy expenditure is slowly decreasing. So if you continue to drop your energy intake, then you likely see that your energy expenditure slowly decreases. And then we get into this kind of negative whirlwind effect where we decrease our energy intake, which decreases our energy expenditure, which decreases our, and it's just back and forth until you waste away to nothing. So do consider the two sides of that equation.
Definitely, because there's a lot of power in that as well. You've got you can manipulate that variable of the energy expenditure. That's a tool.
Now, Nick, as we transition into that week 5-8 training program, many of us are starting to experiment with different circuits. Now, on our training templates, we do have, I think it was over 50, closer to 60 different circuits for a challenger to complete. And this is if they're doing the lean and ripped or the tone and shape training program. Now, some of us are not using the training templates and they're just following the PDS, and they might be concerned about some of the exercises that they aren't able to do. So do you have any advice for someone who wants to maybe mix up a circuit or change a circuit, but they might not have any equipment available to them? For example, those of us in Melbourne training from home.
Yeah, definitely. So there was an example on the forum of somebody that had a dumbbell, but the equipment required was a kettlebell. So you can actually replace it, even though it says kettlebell, you can do a kettlebell swing with the dumbbell. So we need to start to think outside the square. I mean, obviously it's not going to be called a kettlebell swing anymore, but you could do a variation. So it's not as scary or as bad as you think to not have the exact equipment. So firstly, I would look at the exercise and I would go, is it doable with what I have got at home? So is it doable with body weight, or is it doable if I've got a dumbbell instead of a kettlebell? So I would extrapolate that, and then I would look. You can either ask us on the forum, as this person did, or you can quickly look online and say, would this be able to replace this? If you want to. But the other thing is, you can always, always, always do simple body weight exercises for a circuit, because the aim of this is to really just make sure that you are working on technique and other things. So you can slow it right down. There are so many core exercises as well. There's one that's called, I'm now regretting calling it beginner body weight, because the thing is, it's just body weight. There's a body weight circuit on our template. So you can always do that. And that's that takes you through the full body. So there are other options. But yes, my thing that I wanted to tell you about was the handy old towel. I don't know if you ended up using the towel at all. You probably had all your weights all sorted.
But no, I use my little sweat towel a lot with my training. Yeah, it's one of my handholds, yeah.
Did you do the holds with your towel and the squeezes and the rings?
No, so I've used a little bit more for grip training. So you might see a few videos of me doing things like a row with a towel. So I'm holding onto the towel instead of the bar. But keep going. You're talking about isometric exercises. Yeah.
So I do think that I mean, I don't know how you feel about the towel thing, but I know that over the time of the initial lockdown, pretty much every man and his dog on Instagram did film the towel isometrics. And I found them to be quite decent for the back and for the shoulders. So Yeah, I think that if you want to experiment with that sort of stuff, what I think it really does is helps you to learn about the different muscles and learn about what's going on. Because sometimes with weights, especially in a circuit, you get so carried away with the timing and the need to follow what it is that sometimes you're not even connecting the muscle groups that actually are supposed to be used. So, with the shoulders, you might not even necessarily ever feel your rear delts. You know, you might be doing everything anterior delts. You know, there are so many different elements. So with the towel, when you hold on and you squeeze and you actually start to switch on muscles that you might not necessarily be able to usually feel with the weights. So I would say have a look for towel isometrics. I think that they're quite interesting. I think it's good for everybody to go through that phase. So that's something else that you can do. But definitely keep going with your circuits. Don't get stressed about limited equipment, because the nature of a circuit is that you can actually do quite a bit of body weight stuff. So I'd be going back to the basics of your body weight. So I like personally side planks. I like anything to do with crunches, reverse crunches. You've got yourself a circuit already there. You could do your bird dogs and anything glute. You may as well just take this time to work on your glutes, because you could do glute bridges. You could do single leg glute bridges. So they're fantastic. So I would just say don't be limited by the fact that you don't have any equipment. Just go back to basics and get it done.
On most of our training programs as well, on the training template, I created a cardio workout generator. So this is just a little algorithm. You can just click the button as many times as you want and it'll randomly create a small circuit for you to complete. So there's a big list of exercises that you can do. Just keep clicking randomly generate until you find one that you enjoy. And if you hit a few different body parts, that's great. If it's maybe half of your body, let's say four exercises that are, I don't know, a squat, a single leg RDL or a deadlift, and then maybe like a lunge forward and then a lunge backwards, four exercises for the lower body, that will be a really challenging circuit for 30 seconds each exercise. You could do like an upper lower split. So maybe you choose a lower body exercise, upper body, lower body, upper body, and there you've built a circuit for yourself. Or again, you could just focus on the upper body or a full body. So there's lots of different ways that we can develop a circuit. And the idea is that we're trying to challenge that metabolic system where it's a little bit of a challenge through our different energy systems and challenges our cardiovascular a little bit, gives us a bit of a pump. It kind of gives us a little bit of this burnout sensation where we feel that burning feeling in our muscles, and then makes us end the session with a little bit of a sweat, which is always fun as well.
And endorphins, it gets you.
And endorphins, yes.
Yeah, you've got to never underestimate the importance of endorphins and serotonin, dopamine, happiness for us in Melbourne at the moment.
Now, the last question I just wanted to speak about was about rest times. And I guess we often see a question come up across all of our different challenges of, you know, how long should my rest be in between each bout of exercise or between each set? And rest times are often one of the first things that someone would manipulate to try to increase the intensity of a workout. We've probably done this ourselves. We've probably coached people through this. And I'm sure that many of you listening have gone through that process of, well, if I'm going to make it harder, I'm just going to rest less so that it's more difficult. Now, I've gone and written up a pretty nice little article where I explain that sometimes if we are reducing our rest time, that can make our workout, if anything, easier. Okay. And here's the reason why. So if you were to complete a set of exercise at theoretically, you know, 100% of your effort, so you're training, you've done a set of squats, 100% of your effort, you unrack the weight, you're gassed, right? You need a certain amount of time to recover from that bout. And that could be local fatigue, that could be cardiovascular fatigue, could be mentally, it could be other co-contracting muscles that just need time just to reset before you can do it again. Now, if you were to wait maybe 20 seconds or 30 seconds and then go and squat again, you won't be able to complete that squat at the 100% effort that you did for the first set. So if you were trying to do 10 reps of a squat for one set, and then you were to rest for a short amount of time, and then you went to do another set of 10 reps. Hey, maybe you are doing another set of 10 reps, but to achieve that, you've drastically reduced the weight, okay? So sometimes we get caught into this negative feedback loop where you could have squatted, let's say 100 kilos for 10 reps, and that's 100% of your effort. But then you also know that, oh, I've got to do another 3 more sets of squats with 20 seconds rest in between. So maybe I'll just reduce my weight to 60 kilos so I can do 10 reps, rest for 20 seconds, do 10 reps, rest for 20 seconds, and then do 10 reps. So at the end of the day, our overall accumulated load that we're putting on our body will be lower because we have lifted less weight. So that means that we're putting less mechanical tension on our muscles so that we're seeing less growth chronically over time. This isn't just completely eliminating the idea of reducing rest time. Sometimes we are using advanced techniques like drop sets, cluster sets, heck, even like our circuits, you know, this metabolic conditioning. Okay, we use them in some aspects. But my advice would be that you want to be resting as long as you need so that you can tackle the next set at 100% of your effort. And I have gone and developed a little bit of a checklist. So these are just 4 questions to ask yourself if you're ready for the next set. So the first one is, has your cardiovascular system recovered? So what I mean by that is, have you got your breath back? So when I do a set and you see it on, let's say, Instagram, I'll do just 3 reps or something. I do that set and then I'm gassed afterwards and I'm spending like a minute just trying to catch my breath. And that was hard. Okay. So first question to ask yourself, has my cardiovascular system recovered? Have I got my breath back? The next one is, has the target muscle group recovered? So let's say I'm doing bicep curls. I caught my breath because it wasn't too hard. It was just my biceps. I got small biceps. And then next would be, are my biceps ready for another set? Third would be to ask yourself, has other muscle groups that contribute to that exercise recovered? So an example would be like a bench press. Most of us would agree that it's primarily hitting your pecs, but we also know that the shoulders or the delts and the triceps play a big role in the bench press and a lot of other muscles that play that role. So if your triceps are really fatigued, okay, wait a little bit longer so that your triceps are ready. Some other muscles, let's say like a bent over row, sometimes your erector spinae is still pumping and fatigued, so that lower back muscle group. So you might want to wait a moment so that muscle group is ready so that you can do another bent over row pattern. And then that last question to ask yourself, probably the most important one, is that mental side of it. There is that certain hunger that we feel, or that drive. So sometimes when I've done a heavy set, you know, it takes a couple of minutes for me to mentally prepare myself for that next set. So I've got to kind of like pep myself up to be able to have that fire in my belly to go and, you know, squat heavy or deadlift heavy, these types of things.
When you finished a heavy set, do you always say to yourself, I always do, I'm like, well, I'm never doing that again in my life. And then maybe like a minute or two later, you go, all right, I might. And then like maybe another couple of minutes after that, you go, all right. You know that thing where you just, even during the last couple of reps or at the end, you just go, well, that's never happening again in my life. I'm just never going to do it again. I don't like it. Go away. Get me out of here. Yeah. Yeah.
No, that's definitely me.
If you're working at that intensity, then yeah, you rest as long as you want, you know.
So I guess as a general guide, I would recommend that most individuals aim to rest between 1 and 3 minutes. That would be like a rough guide. If you're resting for more than 3 minutes, you might be in that zone of you're taking the piss, right?
Yeah, that's right. Because you don't want to be cooled down either. That's the other thing.
And sure, like if I'm going to do a heavier set, all right, my rest times might be around that 3 minutes, maybe a little bit more. But I have trained with some individuals that are taking like 10 minutes rest in between each set. All right, you're taking the piss there. And then sometimes if we're doing it drastically too short, you're just not recovering well after that set. And then you're basically scaling other variables so that you can reduce your rest time, which could ultimately leave gains on the table. So just a thing to consider that sometimes compressing all of our training session or trying to do more in a shorter time might not lead to great chronic gains in our body, where you may benefit from just chilling out a little bit, recovering, and then tackling that next set hard.
Yeah, but stay with your head in the game. Like, it doesn't mean go on your phone and do a million things, because really, the minute that you let go of that barbell, you should be preparing for the next one. So it's not really about, it is about recovering, but it's also about how do I prepare for the next one? So how do I go through the checklist to prepare my body to do it again? So
yeah.
Yeah, recover, get your head in the game. So it's not really too much time to like upload it to Instagram in between or something. I figured out how to do that.
You know, thinking about what I do in between sets. So probably like the first thing I would do is go and stop recording on my phone. So I record most of my sets. So that's probably the first thing I do, go stop recording. Then I would actually watch back my lift. So I would sit and review while I'm huffing and puffing. I'd sit there and watch my squat. And let's say using a squat as an example, I've got like a qualitative reflection in my head being like, oh man, that third rep was hard, or that second rep just felt icky or whatever. And I'd watch it back and I would look at this evidence and go, well, okay, it actually looked pretty good, even though it felt really crappy. What did I do? Once I've watched back my video, I would then actually still on my phone, go to the Google Spreadsheets app and I would record my weights and how many reps I did. Then I'll put my phone down, probably go get a drink and just sit and prep myself and go, okay, whew, let's do this again. And then usually in that time, you know, I'm hitting that 2 to 3 minute mark and I'm kind of getting ready for that next set. So there are things that you can do in between sets that are productive and getting yourself ready for the next set. I do think that sometimes if your go-to is to grab your phone, open up Instagram and start scrolling, all right, taking the piss, 5 minutes later, you're not training anymore. You're just leisurely hanging out.
Could injure yourself doing that too, because you just, all you need with this heavier stuff is one little mental slip, and that's where you kind of hurt yourself, just because you're not thinking properly and you're not taking everything as you start to get fatigued. So it's so funny, because I would probably, when I'm training at home, I would probably, if the dryer was on, I'd probably take a few things out of the dryer while I'm recovering. Or something like that. Check that I haven't killed one of the canaries with the barbell accidentally thumping on the ground. My advice to him is random. And then, but also the other thing I find is, because I don't have a special, I don't even know what they're called, but you know, the things with the deadlift where you can actually load, is it a winch or whatever it is where you can use to load?
Oh, the lever, the deadlift lever, yeah.
Thank you. I don't have one. So I have to then, I find myself so fatigued trying, if I'm loading something else on there, and I'm like, this isn't a rest. That's not a rest.
Yeah. I just dread packing all the weights away when I'm done. It's like, oh, it's like I'm gassed. Yeah.
You would hate this, but my 110 is still on there from yesterday. But it's good. I actually kept going in there to double check that it wasn't 100, because it felt really good. And I'm like, oh, well, at least the evidence is still there. Because I also loaded it really randomly with some small 10s in between everything else. So it's like your worst nightmare. Like you wouldn't.
You're that person. Oh,
yeah, I'm that. I've got hay on the floor of my gym. I don't even know, but my numbers are good.
You're all over the shop, Nick. Look, Nick, let's wrap it up there. Look, guys, if you've been listening to this and you enjoyed this episode, let us know. Leave us a review on iTunes or reach out to us on socials, and we'd love to get your feedback. And if there's any questions that you'd like us to answer, you can contact us on Instagram or Facebook, and you can be featured in our next weekly show.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Coach Steve.
Thank you, Coach Nick. We'll catch you next time.
Bye.